Welcome to Pyramid to Circles. This podcast is for the leaders and the change makers who have the goal of evolving their company, their department, their team towards more collective intelligence, more empowerment, more self-organization, but to asking themselves how to make this happen, where to start, and how to get inspiration from others. So today, my friend, I would like to address a topic that is at the core of any transformation work. You know, transformation is about changing behaviors. If I want to lose weight or reach some physical performance, I have to change behaviors. I have to eat less, I have to train more, etc. Right? So to change people's behavior, you need to create an experience. An experience in which, if I continue my example, I will start to enjoy a life in which I eat less, train more, etc. So I am in a state to take the actions required to reach my goal. So it's all about creating an experience that will change my behavior. So many of us as change maker, we are trying to create new experiences for people in organizations. So new behaviors, new ways of working, of thinking, of collaborating can take place. So the key is to know how to create those experiences. And that's what my guest today is all about. He's a world expert on experience design. He works for the Chaos Pilot. That is a progressive business design and leadership school in Denmark, where he has the role of program director for the professional experience design program that he teaches how to design experiences that grow people and relationships. So Andy Sontag, welcome. It's really nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to be here. What a warm welcome.
Tell me, where are you as we speak?
I am in Lejre, Denmark, which is just half an hour outside of Copenhagen.
Wonderful. North, south, west, east, west. Cannot be east, right? That would be in the sea.
Yeah. a little bit west. Yeah.
West. All right. Okay. So it's the first time we meet. So we have been put in contact through Adam Rosendahl. Yes. That was a guest.
Wonderful
this
guy.
This podcast a few episodes ago. And he told me, oh, you should absolutely contact Andy and Chaos Pilot. And then my wife is Swedish and she's a coach. And I told her, do you know about Chaos Pilot? And she said, of course, Chaos Pilot is super famous. Everybody has been trained with them in the Nordic countries. And so I realized this, I was uneducated. And then, so I'm super happy to meet you because I want to know more about it. Seems that you're famous all over in the US, in Nordic. So maybe just before we go into what is Chaos Pilot, there are many questions, but maybe you want to just introduce yourself and tell us shortly about you.
Sure. I am originally from the States and I've lived in Denmark for 10 years.
Oh, you're American.
So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm actually American. Right. I work with experience design. I focus mostly on designing learning experiences, designing trainings, designing journeys, some aspect of transformation in the type of experience that I work with. I don't know. Don't know what else to say about myself.
Maybe just if you could define for what is experience design because in what is specific about it, because it's a specific like term that you're using, and I saw that Adam is using it too. I know his work and he explained it, and it's really around creating an experience, right? So what do you mean by that, by experience design?
Absolutely. And I think, obviously it's one of those words that's just totally overused, like innovation, or that you need to unpack what it means. We define experience design as a method for framing experiences with the aim to change the way that people feel, think, and ultimately act. And really important that it goes in that sort of order as well. So when we are working with designing experiences, we always work with feelings and emotions first. And then we work with sort of, how that ripples into the way that people think. And then finally, as a seed for changing behaviors, which is a complex thing to do, as you well know.
Okay, great. I'd love to hear more about that and this, especially this order. There's a specific order there. Maybe one word about Chaos Pilot.
Yeah.
So we understand the context in which you are.
For sure.
What is Chaos? So I know nothing about this school. I just saw the website. Tell us what it is for those who don't know.
For sure. It's a alternative business school. It's been around for 30 years.
Okay.
We have our 30th anniversary actually this year. We're going to have a great party.
Congratulations.
I believe. And we have really been at the forefront of alternative education, creating highly experiential, impactful adult education. We have a 3-year program where the main components are process design, which is really around facilitating and organizational change, business design, project design, and leadership, which sort of circles all of those things. And we also have professional programs, which are short courses. I run one of those, which is around experience design. And also another one I run is around design for transformation as well. And it's really, we have a global, community of people that engage with us and are really at the forefront of making, education more engaging and meaningful.
What's the, I'm curious to ask you the big why of this school, and I guess maybe yours is aligned with it probably somehow, you will tell us, but the big why in the sense of what is the impact that Chaos Pilot, this school is having or want to have through the mean of offering all those programs around experience design. Why is it important that this school exists?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we're actually in a change process right now where we are redefining that. At the way that it's stated right now is that it's about being at the forefront of education to empower leaders to change the future, I believe. I don't know, it's somewhat, general, but I think, if I step away from what's written on the website and speak to the impact that I really see in our clients, it is really about integrating personal growth and development with business and like organizational impact and growth and development. And I would say around 50% of the people that I work with are working for NGOs or social enterprises. And this type, we have a large following in that sense. And then the businesses that are working with us are generally interested in creating some sort of type of social or environmental impact.
But why, what about thinking of, so if you want to create a new story of the future, a new future, a different future, you say the, I don't know, you put it, change the future or change, what did you say? In what sense experience design and what you, and the school can contribute to it? Why is it that that skill or that set of skill or that kind of people can change the future? If the future needs to be changed.
Yeah. That's
the assumption we are talking with it, but it's okay.
I can just tell you my story and my interaction with the Chaos Pilots, because I've also only been there a short period of the 30 years, right? So I have my sort of view of what's going on. And so my experience, I actually attended the Chaos Pilots as a student first, and I graduated I studied entrepreneurship and sustainability in Seattle. And I was looking for an alternative MBA school, and I came to the school. You have to get into the school, you have to apply, and you have to go through a 3-day workshop where you do work and you're observed the whole time. It's super intense. And what they observe you for is your ability to co-create and ability to work in a team. And what immediately struck me when I saw how the people that were in the school interacted was they were incredibly warm. They had this incredibly generative way of relating to each other. And I just knew instantly, I want to be part of that. I want to be part of that. Like whatever structures enable that type of positive community to exist. And so, you know, in terms of how experience design is there to impact the future, I think, or, you know, is there to impact the future, can positively impact the future. I believe that it's a lot about creating a culture, a way of being that is more generative, more, you know, creating positive externalities instead of negative externalities. I think I haven't read it yet, but I just saw that, you know, the new Paul Hawken book as well, which it's all about this like regenerative language. And in some way, if we really want to make this the big transition towards a more sustainable future, there also needs to be some joy in it. The changing, not just sort of like the systems and the technology, but also the way in which we relate to each other and to create a more harmonious, less hurt, you know, or people with less trauma in them, you know, is more healed society in a way. So that was a long answer.
That's great. Thank you. And I just, you remind me, Paul Hawken and all his research on, I remember this video that he made a talk like 10 years ago, and I think people can Google it. And he was, I just remember this guy struck me. He was listing all the organizations in the world. He was doing this research, trying to list all those that are trying to do good or something good, or, you know, being purpose-centric, trying to have a positive impact, or, you know, either for society, for the environment, for the spiritual well-being of people, you know. And he started to list as a generic of a film, you know, in the film, you have a name of every actor or people, you know, and it takes a while in a film to, when you see mm-hmm. the generic. And he started to say, and it was one name of one organization per line. And he said, and he started to go, and he said it would take weeks and actually weeks and weeks and weeks to look at all the, to just read all the names. And he was just, you know, his intention was to make the people aware that there is a movement that is huge that is happening on the planet. And that was a very, 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 you know, awakening and engaging to say, okay, maybe I'm part of that. Not people tend to think they're alone and having those thoughts of, I'd like to do something, or maybe I'm doing something somewhere. And they just don't realize that actually millions of people and thousands of organizations committed somehow to make a difference. Anyway, just I invite people to Google this Paul Hawken.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Have you seen this video? Maybe you've
no,
seen
I haven't
it.
Seen no? it. No,
it's an old one. It was actually, this is how he got really, I think it is how he got big before he created this NGO or anyway. And I love what you say about being generative, more harmonious. There must be joy, because we tend to talk about sustainability, like to fix the problem. But it's very boring to fix problem. I mean, no one wants to fix problem. Yeah. And I think if we act from fear and from fear of lack or fear of problem, we are like there's a part of ourselves that is not activated. And we know it from neurosciences, right? We're defending, we contract it. But if there's joy, we're expanding, we are relaxed and we are more creative. So is it something like that you're trying to do? Like in re-enabling people invent themselves, invent the future, but in a way that is generative, that is more relaxed, that is more joyful, that is more creative. Does it make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think there is a real connection in a way between, because what you started talking about was this, you know, Paul Hawkins listing all these organizations that are involved in purpose in a way. And I think there is a real connection in a way between that sort of movement towards working in a more purposeful, more meaningful way, and you know, creating a good employee experience around that. I think, you know, it's also like a synergistic, outcome for organizations as well, with this whole, you know, the great resignation and all of this the need to create a space that employees actually want to be and working in a more purposeful way. And how do you then sculpt that space and that culture? When we define experience design, we define it as the place in between the circles of customer experience and employee experience, and as well as brand experience, which is like the narrative of the brand. And so I say that just to say that, you know, it's not as simple as just working with the employee experience, right? Like you need to then also align your organization to work in a generative way as well. You're not going to create like that's yeah, like there needs to be a coherence in an organization in order to genuinely create those spaces.
So for instance, a regular company, you know, industry or, you know, IT or they are listening to us and they say, okay, this is interesting, but oh, you just say, what did you say? Employee experience, brand experience, customer experience. So concretely, if I'm a leader, I'm a manager, change maker in one of those companies, how can I apply what you just said? What would that mean to align employee experience, brand experience, and customer experience? And you say this is in the middle, there's the experience design. That yes. is, I guess, waving all this through in something coherent.
Yeah.
Can you so, just give us yeah, a bit so more I can just tell you, how would that work or what would that mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I remember one of the first work experiences I had where I really got confronted with this was I got brought into this Swedish telecom company. And they just had really bad customer experience ratings. I mean, they were really getting hammered and, you know, they had really bad, you know, stories, social media, everything. And so when we came in, we started by doing research. And what immediately popped out was that their employee experience was just awful as well. I mean, the employees, they hated working there. And so when we really mapped out the system, we ended up working with their employee experience first as the way of of ultimately impacting the customer experience. And I think when I talk about these type of stuff, people get this intuitively, right? Like there is fully an integration, right? Between the well-being of the employees and their ability to create happy customers, right?
In this case,
does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I'm thinking of, there's a word for that. This is the, how do they say, attention should be mirrored. So you mirror attention. I don't know, there's a word for that. I can't find it now.
Yeah.
Like the mirroring of attention. So if you take care of employees, then it's mirrored in the customer experience. But concretely, like if you keep the story, what are the one or two things that you change in the employee experience? In terms, and in what way experience design been helpful for having the tool for that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so the thing that really, it's complex. So you have to work on changing the story and the narrative. And, you know, I think one of the things, the big things that we see, for example, is, you know, moving from calling the human resources department or like into the employee experience department and these different, and the renaming of actually the departments in the organization so that it reflects a care for the employees. And I mean, what we concretely did was come in and do some run workshops with them where we really aimed to give the employees the experience of care. and also being listened to, being heard, being appreciated, having gratitude, you know, for their work expressed. I think a lot of managers are working to put out fires and, you know, solve problems. And, you know, in terms of actually creating a space that people want to be in, it's super important to have the experience of being cared for.
I fully see in a seminar how possible it is, and especially people like amazing people like you coming. I mean, people, of course, it must be in a very, very nice, they feel taken care of in the moment, but how do you sustain it with the management? So now you're gone, and then the next day, okay, now the HR called Employee Experience Department, great. But they must, I imagine there's more, and to make it like a lasting systemic change. So how do you, and one of the things should be, or might be, that managers start to behave, talking about behaviors earlier, start to behave a bit differently as managers, so they show the care on a daily basis, not just on during a seminar.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I don't know if I'm pushing to, I don't want to push.
No.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Because there's the notion of, I guess you've changed some experience also for the managers, for them to change their behaviors towards the collaborators,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. We didn't prepare that. So I'm just exploring.
Yeah, it's really great. No, I think it's an excellent question. And I think, I mean, it's at the heart of what, the you know, the question of being a consultant in general, of like, how much can you actually change?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's where I, in my work, I am an educator. Mm. I'm not there to make the change for you. I'm not there to, you know, make sure that the bottom lines, the numbers, the KPIs change, you know. I'm there to change the way that people think, feel, and ultimately, I hope I plant the seeds for them to change the way that they behave. So I believe that that's a more sustainable way to make change, in the sense that, it's the classic example of teaching someone to fish rather than.
Yeah, of course. You know. So that's, you say those words, so think, feel, and act. And but you said earlier, it starts, didn't say that it starts with feeling, or the other way around.
Feeling.
I think you said that.
Feeling.
That's very interesting, because we often, I'm working currently, I mean, we know in the organization that we jump on the thinking, right? Mm. So, we should think different. We should, let's, this is our new goal. This is what we want to. So it's all in the mind. It's all in the head. And then we basically expect people to deliver on the basis of this goal. And we call it change management. This cannot be change management. This is just a objective, you know, definition. But so the feeling part, I'm just curious to hear you or your creating an experience. I guess it's also creating a space for people simply to share their feeling and the emotions.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's
about creating something powerful, something impactful, something that is remembered, something that's held onto, something that's cherished, something that is, you know. In our experience design model, we have this 5E model that we use to design experiences: the excitement, the entry, the engagement, the exit, the extension. And the extension, just as an example, you know, we always give people here, people won't be able to see this, but, you know, give people a little, you know, extension, which is an airplane, which is the logo of the Chaos Pilots, you know, and different things like this. But, you know, I've had clients tell me that they keep that. Right, as a, it is literally holding the essence of the experience in some way for them. There is a degree of being able to go back to that experience, like the deep experience they had, if they, you know, really think about it in a way, and that can in some way be a grounding, touch point in terms of that longer term transformation. I can give you an example. I'm working with a client right now, He's the founder of a large digital agency in Brazil, and he came. I worked with him in 2018. He came to an immersion we made in it's this like luxury jungle sort of. It's an old coffee farm outside of Sao Paulo. Amazing place, and you know, yeah. And so, and that was a fantastic immersion. I always work with artists. I work with, you know, food designers. So really making an immersive experience for people. And we also work very much to sort of get to that place of deep emotional impact. And, you know, we've been in contact ever since he came to that training, and now I'm working with him again, and he's working on the same change that he's trying to bring to his organization, which is essentially bringing more purpose and meaning to this digital agency through learning. So I really see like that is in some way an example of how an experience leads to supports people on a journey. And I think the human experience is incredibly complex. I think there's a quote that, you know, the human experience, like every experience is sort of like putting a spark in a keg of powder, and you never exactly know how it's going to explode. Right. So our work as experience designers is not precise in that way. Like we have to trust that the experiences we feed in will create generative impact. And when we come with that sort of, you know, core intention, that's the best that we can do, because you cannot, you know, one of the things I always say is that ultimately, even though I work with experience design, I actually don't believe that you can design experiences, in the sense that I could never put an experience in your head. Like everyone will experience the same phenomenon differently. And we do this in the training. We give people like a really intense experience, and we have them then draw out what they experienced. And people will, I mean, the wildest thing, like things that are so clear, some people just totally blank over. You know, and so, like, it's just as like the complexity of actually designing an experience is incredibly high because of the nature of the human mind. That was a little bit of a tangent there. I don't know.
No, that's great. I love you. The distinction, I can design experiences, but I cannot, I mean, I work in design experiences, but I cannot design an experience because it depends on you. And the same, the same moment, the same event, the same context will create different experiences for different people. So, that's why it's so complex to create change, right? Because you cannot create change. You can just create a space in which people have the opportunity to create, to have an experience or to experience something, and that something may spark.
Yeah.
Like you say, or fire or not.
Yeah,
but you cannot hold that. It depends on them. It depends on
there's a
deep sense of detachment, and you need to, it's like you're committed to create it, and at the same time, like you need to let go of the result.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It is. I love that contradiction. I think there's a beautiful. There's a facilitator book that I have as well, where they talk about that, like the need to both be fully present and engaged and detached, and being able to move in between those two spaces. The other thing that I would love to comment on that specific point, because I think it's really rich, is I'm actually working right now on developing a model, which is the distinction between design thinking and artistic thinking, which I believe is sort of a coming thing. And one of the main differences that I see is that artistic thinking leaves the design process, or leaves the process at the point of inspiration, and then trusts the participant, viewer, to make change as they want. Whereas design thinking and a lot of the ways that we work with like change process normally, and like, especially, you know, learning, they're always like, got to change the behavior, you know, neuroscience of learning is all about, you know, behavioral change. And I wonder if we're tricking ourselves. Like, I wonder if that's even possible. And I think that maybe when I believe that a lot of innovations in the world, like big sort of innovations, come from, at a fundamental level, giving the sort of participant or the customer, the user, more trust, you know? And if we really take that step, what does it mean for us as change agents to really give more trust to the people going through our experiences? And I think in some way you have to just let them go, let give them what you can give them. And I don't know if that how that resonates for you.
It does a lot. I see companies, they say, okay, in order to succeed our business plan, we need to develop those three key behaviors, A, B, C. And we need a program for people to, embrace those new behaviors. Like, they need to take more risk, or they need to, I don't know, things like that. And in a way, there is in this, there's a good intention in that. I can see the good intention. I see the intention of growth. I see the intention of, also just attend the culture place. Cannot just not do anything with the culture. So that's a, you need to animate in a sense of animation and bringing soul to the collective. You need to carry some conversations and but there is another perspective to it, that is there's some level of expectation at the same time. And that level of expectation is another way to say, I don't fully trust you. You guys should do this. And you're not so perfect the way you are. You should be like that. You would be better. And so that's like there is this, this is not explicit, but implicitly, there's this perspective that people should be, they are not good enough the way they are. They should be different. And what you're saying is, no, people are the way they are perfect. We trust them, and we just invite them to a place of, to the point of inspiration, and that's it. Let them be there.
Yeah. Well, I believe in,
it's very subtle, but it's,
yeah. It's, yeah. Key. You know, when you give that example of, you know, this like coming in, it's very classic. I get that a lot in my work as well, you know, change these behaviors. And if you think about, you know, the work of Frederick Laloux or, you know, Norman Wolf, right? I haven't read his book. I just listened to the podcast with him. Very, very rich. You guys should all listen to that.
Yeah, it's the first podcast we made. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Really, really rich. Mm. And you know, if we want people to bring them their full selves to work, you know, their full self is not just these three behaviors that the leadership want, or, you know, and I think what it is for you to bring your full self to work is different than me. And in that way, you know, when we move also into the realm of wanting to, you know, create transformation, or, you know, plant seeds of transformation, transformation is inherently personal. There is no such thing as like mass transformation. Like, whatever will be transformational for you is different than what will be transformational for me. And so when we aim to bring a transformation to an organization, I think it's very complex in that sense, because every individual needs a different transformation.
So that's very interesting, because the word transformation in itself is carrying the idea that we are, there is A and B. And
yeah.
There is a movement, there is a journey towards B from A. And then, or let's say a state of being, a sense of personal development, but that is that an external intention, like the transformation, the head of transformation, can impose somehow on you in a way, and that will be, and you're as you're an organization that carries this belief, you basically got the expectation on you to take on this journey and to explore this question. But it's what you're saying is that there is no such thing as mass transformation. It's only transformation is only personal. So even the word transformation itself doesn't make sense. It's more, well, can we find another word for
no,
it's like it's personal evolution or
yeah. Well,
it should work for everybody's personal evolution, and that's it.
I believe transformation is possible. And I mean, I've seen transformation happen on a massive scale, but I think the way that is done is through lots of individual transformations. And so, you know, essentially from an experience design perspective, your role is to hold a space where people, and you know this as a facilitator, you know, that they get to put in their own meaning. People need to put their own meaning into, so you have to create the context for them to put their own meaning into it, right? Yeah. But I also want to, one other. Oh no.
You're saying that people should put their own meaning into it.
Yes. Yes.
No, can I just share a story that it makes me think about when I hear you? I don't know. Do you know Tony Robbins?
Yeah.
Yes, you do. Of course you know. So my friends listening to this book, I will laugh because I'm a fan of this guy. And he's such a, for me, such a master. And he does this program called Unleash Power Within. And I did this program, took this program in like 3-4 years ago. We were 13,000 people in the room. 13,000 is crazy, right? And then he create on day one evening an experience that is that he connects to, it's called Unleash Power Within. So it's like you go through your blockage, you choose light, you choose yourself, and it's a symbolic experience, but that's in your body. It's a walk on fire. So he organizes for 13,000 people in an hour to walk barefoot on fire. Don't do it at home. You
know? Yeah, I've tried this as well.
You've done the same program.
No,
and,
I haven't.
So that's an experience. I never did it before, was barefoot working like on, I don't know, 3-5 meters at least. Yeah, I would say 3 to 5 meters on coal, a burning coal, which is like very not normal to do. The good thing is, so it puts people in state but it's not about the physical achievement. It's about what you say, bring your own meaning into it. But still you have to do, there's a moment, like there is a before and after. And what an experience design, right?
Yeah, well, that's a fantastic example. I mean, I don't know if you know, like Kolb's learning cycle.
Nope.
It is one of the main sort of, methodologies we use when we design processes, which is, you can look it up, Kolb, K-O-L-B. Kolb's learning cycle. And essentially it starts with a direct experience and then you reflect on that direct experience. And then you sort of, then you would like sort of whatever, progress to making it more like get theory and then try it out. But anyway, a lot of what we do as well, you know, is like, I'm sure you do these things as well as a facilitator, having people play with Legos. These different, and then all of a sudden it's like, but what is this, you know, and then what does this say about communication in an organization? All of a sudden it's a super rich place to put meaning into this sort of something that allows people to be playful.
It's a Danish thing. Lego.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're actually working with Lego at the moment. They're a fantastic company. They really are. But yeah, no, I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, that what came to your mind in terms of putting your own meaning into a transformational experience was this like extremely intense experience that you had.
But there is something, that is a disruption to your routine or to your, there is the idea of being disrupted in your comfort zone. Yes. And that creates an experience that enables, that is checking maybe your, in your brain, some neurons, highways or something. Something is, there's an opening, there's a potential opening. So an experience would be something disruptive, like Adam does when he does this late night art events, mixing music and art and conversations. And
well, I think fundamentally it's important that people are uncomfortable at some, in some aspect, right? I think it's, you know, to be challenged, to be thrown into a space where you are confronted, you are challenged, you have to look at things differently because this is different than what you normally face. And oftentimes that has to do with the degree of, you know, uncomfort. And I say that when I start working with a group that I hope that I make you uncomfortable. Obviously, you know, that's not like the overlying feeling, right? But there has to be some degree of that challenge in order for a deep experience to, you know, to take root. Right. I really believe that. I just read a fantastic book. It's called Dopamine Nation. And it's just a wonderful, I think, very spot on critique of modern society. And essentially the main thing she's saying is that we have too much dopamine. We have too much good experience and it's ruining, like creating bad experience in all kinds of ways. You know, we need, as people, we need to have a, you know, a balance of feeling good, but also feeling challenged and actually have painful experiences as well, she talks about.
This complaint of you are if the world becomes too challenging or too it's like this complaint that we hear a lot. I'm offended. It's being offendedness. Is it this what you call the dopamine nation? Is it something related to that, or because that's a critique we hear a lot in people? You know, this there's a lot of joke around that. Are you familiar with Jordan Peterson's work?
Yeah, 12 Rules. I'm not really familiar. Okay. I mean, just a little bit, tiny. Yeah. Yes, provocative.
Yeah. What? Well, it's. I think it's in this line of thinking. To accept the confrontation, to accept the challenge, to go when it's unpleasant.
Yeah. I think, you know, for me, I working with experience design, and that is very connected. I mean, I work with, you know, UX department sometimes, and the motto of Silicon Valley is this, to create this frictionless world, or there's like this underlying sort of goal of technology. You look at how like Uber and all these different modern companies have created increasingly like frictionless ways of interacting in the world. I believe we need friction as well. Like, I think, you know, I don't believe that happiness will come from a frictionless life. I don't think that should be the goal of humanity. I don't think that we should aim for happiness at all in a way. I think that well-being is a better word, where there's a balance, right? There's a, you know, yeah. And I think that as consultants, as, you know, people, you know, creating customer experiences, I think it's very important that, that we embrace some degree of friction and we're okay with it. And I think a lot of that, especially as like a facilitator, you know, this, like the degree with which a group is able to go through a challenging experience is very highly correlated with you or the leader of that group's like ability to hold that space, ability to be with them in that.
Well, that's very profound, I think. So the more you hold you have this capacity to hold a space in which there's friction, the more transformative or the more evolutionary or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So what does it take then for a leader to be someone who can, and you know, be okay with a certain level of friction for the people I'm in charge of?
Well, I tell you what, I have a degree of being complex shy myself, so it's something that I work on. Like, I think I'm because I am challenged by it, I think I'm also like quite aware of it. And I think I can think of people that I've interacted with that have embodied that in a way. And I think there is a degree of leaning into the situation. And I know that as a facilitator, you know, you get into those situations, right? I remember I was running a program and someone just absolutely lost it. Like, I don't know, she had just this emotional reaction to what was going on that was like above and beyond the scope of what would make sense to most people, right? Or, you know, the context. And there's that, you know, you can either stick to your plan or you can lean into that space and hold space for her, for the whole group. And that can be transformative for everyone in the group rather than, you know, just that person, right? So sort of witnessing that one person's, you know, going through the challenge. I think, you know, it's not like we try to, but I think in a lot of our programs, our participants end up crying, or there is, you know, some degree of emotional, depth that triggers learning for everyone in that space in a way.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to ask you a question on this because I don't want to mislead our audience. And myself, I'm not clear. So design thinking, experience design, is it the same thing? In my mind, experience design is less about the inner space and the world of feeling and the world of the friction happening inside that you would lead into or let happen, etc. It's more about putting on a flip chart with post-its. Okay, A, B, C, D, this is what's going on. And then this is what we should do in the back office in order to create that service. I mean, I'm totally exaggerating, and but you see what I mean. There is less of the I, it's more of the what and the it, and less of the I. So maybe I'm mistaken, but that was my intuitive perception of it. Less transformative, more in the making, like a process from iterative process for creating something collaboratively. Am I mistaken, or what you're doing is a version of design thinking that is more transformative?
So yeah, I would say design thinking is a,
and no disrespect, by the way, for this. On the contrary, I mean, I'm a big fan and I learn a lot from them, by the way.
So we're just
a bit in a caricature, but
no, for sure. I mean, I would say design thinking is, you know, to be more precise with language, say like the iterative mindset, the learning through action mindset, is at the heart of sort of, it's sort of at the roots of a lot of design disciplines that have come, you know, since then, right? Like, so you have people now within the field of experience design, it is a burgeoning field as well. So design thinking is sort of like, at the root of experience design, and then experience design sort of grew out of design thinking, I would say. Mm-hmm. Or they are, maybe starting in similar, you know. I think the other thing is, right, we've been doing experience design for you know, as long as people, you know, told each other stories, but it's also about the sort of evolution of that language. And it, under the experience design umbrella, you have, you know, most people have jobs in interface design, UX design, you know, service design, customer experience design, but you also have employee experience design. Now it's getting super specific within experience design. Mm-hmm. You have people that are, you know, a new job title is experience copywriter. So as we have more and more conversational interfaces, there's people that are specifically focusing on that, you know, aspect of the experience, writing copy for it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I definitely say that I am in some way, critical towards design thinking, mainly because it is, anthropomorphic, or like, it's like, you know, focused on humans. It's human needs. And sure, you can design a banking app that is a really good experience and give everyone smartphones that are really good experiences. But when you sort of extrapolate that to billions of people, does that really create the best outcome for everyone, right? So I think we need a life-centered design instead of a human-centered design.
Wow, okay. If you think back to your word, generative.
Generative, yes.
Generative is, I see, it's like unliving. So it's generative serves life. It doesn't serve humans only. It's about life itself, right?
Yeah.
So you it's not about being sustainable. It's about being generative and then, you know, and leave my ecosystem, my whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It could be people. It could be trees. It could be the air, depending on what I'm doing. And then, so it's applicable for everybody.
Yeah.
While sustainability has different meaning for you know, different businesses.
Yeah,
but being generative, as in a way, speaks to everyone, because everybody is in an ecosystem that is either thriving or dying, or stagnating. And if you're generative, you're living this ecosystem. You're making it more full of life, more energetic, more resilient.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it fundamentally opens the design brief, right? And I mean, you know, in terms of the outcomes that we're looking for. So like me and my partner, Alberto Berrio, we have developed a model called the Ripples model, which is design for transformation model, where we take into account, you know, we're looking at the outcomes for people, for nature, into a customer experience design sort of strategy, where you're really taking a holistic view of the outcomes that you're creating. And in that way, you know, we're really seeing that, you know, it's been shown that meaningful brands outperform sort of, you know, brands that are perceived as less meaningful. There's a there's a brand index called the Meaningful Brand Index, created by Havas Media, that has shown this over many years. And then on top of that, right, you have the other synergy, which is that employees as well are looking to work in organizations that are purposeful. So there's win-win-win when you create a product, a service that is creating generative outcomes for your customers, but also for society and also for nature. If you don't mind, I was really struck by an article I read actually from McKinsey just today.
Yeah.
And they said nearly 7 out of 10 employees are reflecting on their purpose because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
Those employees,
7 out of 10, it's huge.
7 out of 10.
Everyone.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. Those employees who say that they live their purpose at work are 6.5 times more likely to report higher resilience. And so you really create this sort of, you know, I really believe that, you know, you can create this win-win-win, where it is for the organization, but it's also generative for society and for nature.
So now I understand that experience design could be actually in your perspective, it could be called generative experience design. It's what you really mean.
That's nice. I like it. Generative experience design.
That's what you really mean when you say experience design. You mean generative experience design. That's the meaning of it.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm.
So it was interesting. You refer to UX and in different user experience in different contexts. Or if I'm in a company, or I'm thinking of, okay, how can I create experiences everywhere that are generative, you know, for my employees, for my customers, you know, whatever, between in my team. Should I start thinking like where to start? I want to create, I also connect the idea of value creation and experience, because the value, right, is in the experience I'm getting from, you know, my interactions with others or with a brand, or so that experience creates value for me or not, destroys value. But it's a key word, really. I think if just to stay with this word of experience is very central if you want to start thinking of value creation in a real sense. And some, yes, can be monetized. But it should be if you're a company. But as human beings, we want to be someone who create, you know, a positive experience for others, or a generative experience for others. And we want to, if we're a manager, we want to, you know, think how we do that as a team, how my team is creating let's put it this way, my team becomes a team that creates a generative experience for others in the company or for our stakeholders, wherever they are. So like, where to start? Like, okay, I'm this person, I'm asking this, I'm turning to you. Like, oh, right. Do you have a little recipe? a three-step process. We all love three steps process. Or maybe a map, or like a checklist, sure. or some tips. I don't know.
Sure. I mean, I think it's very hard to answer that contextually or sense, but I mean, there is the process that we go through when we design experiences, is that we start by defining the meaningful outcomes that we want to create.
Mm-hmm.
So a meaningful outcome could be, for example, to create the feeling of community, to create the feeling of belonging. And obviously you want to look at, you know, your specific context. You know, we created this, you know, this Ripples model where you can map out, you know, put in the sustainable development goals that you want to work on, for example. Where there's also scientific based, core meanings, which are these like the deepest meanings that you can touch people with, which are like community, beauty, duty, accomplishment, all of these different things. So first step, define the meaningful outcomes, which is sort of the deepest place that you want to impact people with from your experience. And then the second step is to define the feelings that you want people to have at a more granular level. So along the journey, at the excitement when they first hear about the experience, at the entry when they enter the experience, at the engagement when they're sort of in the meat of the experience, and the exit of the experience when they're leaving it, and the extension, sort of a physical or digital object that extends the experience.
Well, that's the 5E you mentioned earlier.
It's the 5E model, yeah.
Okay.
So then you're sort of designing the journey, but without designing what happens, you're designing first how you want people to feel. And what's amazing about that, when you actually follow this process, is that it makes it so much easier to get into those practicalities. Because if you know that you really want people to feel honored, for example, when they're entering your next consulting training, Mikkel, you know, like if you want them to feel honored, you know, you can maybe give them an envelope that has their name on it. There's a lot of different ways that you can go about creating that feeling So what it can do is it can enable you to create a coherence in the experience that you create. Yeah. Did that answer your question?
It's super clear. Thank you. That was great. That's a gold nugget. The meaningful outcome, I can relate to it. And I said things that I really understand, but the thinking or defining the feeling at every step, you know, it's there is something very interesting here, that it's really acknowledging the importance of the feeling as an element of reality. Like what you're also saying is like, you know, feelings is true, it's real. We better work with it when it has been like by far ignored, or, you know, we were thinking of the usage of thing. I can, my car drives faster or is more safe or it looks better. But how I feel in the experience of every touch point, and as you say, it's a very different way to think. And because that's applicable for everyone. You can have a service or a product, you can be a support function, you can be an independent, you can be just as a human being. You can even make your own charter, like people, you know, that hear about me, what do I want them to feel, or when they start connecting. You know, you can even, I guess, you can even apply it for yourself.
Yeah,
totally. That's great. Thank you. Thank you for that model. Where can we find more about you and your work? Tell us about your program. If you want to know more and join your program, because you're teaching in this program.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
a little advertisement here. Let's go for it.
Well, if you resonate with this, I mean, I love connecting with people and learning about people's work and context and how this can work with them. But we run a training in experience design as well. How long does it take? We have a 3-day physical training, and we run it around the world. And we also have an online training, which is a design for transformation program, which is 2 months online.
Okay. So I guess there's a website. It's on the Chaospilot website.
Yes.
Okay, so that will be also in the description of the podcast, and you can find
yourself. Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Super, really nice. Okay, so maybe is there something else you want to say or share, or that you haven't touched on yet?
Good. I think we covered a lot of things. Kind of in a hopscotch different way, or like jumping around the different points, but I think it's been a really good, really good conversation.
It's been very inspiring. So I'd like to offer and ask if you're okay with that, that as I'd like to invite our guest to have a minute of intimacy with the audience. So I'd like to turn off my mic and I remove my headset so I wouldn't hear you. And it would be you alone with the audience. And it's interesting because people can listen to this podcast in the future. In the long future, or in the short future, we don't know. So after having had this conversation over the last hour or so, what would you like to say or to tell our audience? So are you up for it?
I'm up for it. Yeah.
Okay. So
I might hack the brief a little bit, but I trust.
Just it's your moment. You do what you want. If you want to, like I say, if you want to stay silent, you can stay silent. If you want to tell a story, it's really up to you. It's your moment, really.
Perfect. Okay.
All right.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening. Really an honor just to talk to Mikhail. And what I want to do is I would love to just play you a little bit of music, because sometimes I think we need more music in our lives. So here you go. It's a track called Nostalgia from Mulatto Astaki. So I just decided to play a little bit of music. Hope that was okay.
That's wonderful. Hope this, you have the rights for this music?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I didn't think about that.
Oh, Lord. That's okay. I hope that's okay. Well, that's fine. Thank you very much. So I guess that was an experience, right? Or of integration of this great conversation. Really, really, really enjoyed Andy meeting you, because that was our first time we met. There's so much depth in your approach. You have so much been deep in exploring what it means to do what you do, and then I think you're a master really. So I really loved hearing you and learning from you. So all the best for the future. Let's stay in touch. You want to say
a
last
thing? Thank you so much. Yeah, I really, really enjoy the conversation and your curiosity and the questions and sort of the way we covered so much ground.
Yeah, so. We did. And all the best to your program and to Chaos Pilot. And I hope this will bring some audience to it. And then for our friend who's listening to this, hope this was inspiring for you. And I hope you get something that you can apply in your life. And then, stay tuned for our next episode. We meet soon. Bye.